SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Please welcome.
It's the opening kickoff with Carver and Lisi.
All right, off and running on tonight's edition of Carver and Lisi. Sports Grid Radio, Sirius Channel 159. Lisi holding it down for 2 hours, baby. Big show tonight. Big show. Thursday night football in Kansas City. Divisional matchup. We got the Kansas City Chiefs and Denver Broncos. Right now on FanDuel, Kansas City minus 10.5 total. Set at 47.5. Juice to the under at minus 115. This could be a sinking ship in terms of Denver right now. We saw Sean Payton come out last week, trade Randy Gregory to the San Francisco 49ers. There's been reports potentially that Jerry Jeudy has asked for a trade. Cortland Sutton could be on that list as well. If they don't win this ballgame, or at least show out and make it competitive, everybody could be on the chopping block for the Denver Broncos. And it's quite ironic, isn't it? Sean Payton thought he would just waltz off the set of Fox Studios. Hey, I'm making a few million dollars a year, providing insight and analysis. I'll just go to the Denver Broncos. I'll tweak it a little bit. Just tell Russ what he's missing, a little WD-40, a little liniment, and we'll get this thing right back on track. Playoffs are bust. Well, guess what, Sean? You've been away a long time. No more shines. Because this team is absolutely a but defensively as well, they have fallen apart. Our Sirius Radio audience to Carver and Lisi, Sports Grid Radio, Sirius Channel 159, breaking down the Thursday night slate between Kansas City and Denver, talking about Sean Payton, talking about the identity of the Denver. Strength of the team with Nate Hackett for the most part. The statistic that you heard all last year, if the Denver Broncos offense could only score 17 or 18 points a game, they'd be 10-3. They'd be, 12-5 at the end of the year. They'd be a playoff team. That's all they needed. They needed to turn around the offense. Coached up maybe the offensive side of the ball. There's been a little bit more consistency out of Russell Wilson, even though he's not a leader of this team, even though this team has no chemistry. The defensive front seven has given up 180-plus on the ground to opposing offenses. They're giving up over 290 passing yards to opposing offenses. This isn't the Big 12, baby. This is the AFC West. Sean Payton, step up. Coach this team. Don't attach yourself to the one negative surrounding this whole team. And I don't want to hear Russell Wilson's playing better. Yes, he statistically is playing much better. That doesn't mean this team has chemistry. This doesn't mean that Russell Wilson has taken this team under his wing and coached it up or be that guy that this team could turn to as the emotional and vocal leader of that locker room. That is the one thing the Denver Broncos lack. That is why Patrick Mahomes, that is why Jalen Hurts, that is why Brock Purdy, Joe Burrow, those players elevate their game and elevate their teammates around them. That's the difference. When you look at Tom Brady, people wanted to play for New England because they wanted to play for a winner. The Denver Broncos do not want to play for Russell Wilson. We're just getting started. You want to join in on the conversation about Thursday night? Three college games on tap. We'll get you updated with those. Give us a call, 844-843-6879. That's 844-843-6879. Kansas City rocking the all-red uniforms. Red jersey, red helmet, red pant, baby, for Thursday night football. The Carver and Lisi, Thursday night same game parlay. Let me give it to you. And this is, we're a little bit nervous because we don't know about Jerry Jeudy. Is he going to play? Is he going to get limited touches, especially if he wants off of the football team? But we did take Isaiah Pacheco in terms of 90 plus rushing yards. Why? Weakness of Denver's the front seven, a little wind in the air. Maybe Kansas City runs it on that front seven. Pacheco could have a big day. We're on Jerry Jeudy for 70-plus receiving yards. Carver liked Russ to throw for 1.5 touchdowns and Rashee Rice to hit pay dirt at plus 280. So those are your four picks. We got Jeudy 70-plus, Pacheco 90-plus on the ground, Rashee Rice and Russell Wilson actually 2-plus passing touchdowns. If you jump on that same game parlay, at least as of last night, it's plus 43.69 in terms of that. $100 will give you $43.69. You're living at Mike's Buffet, no bib included, if you hit that. And if we hit it, guess what? We'll be celebrating. College football, quick updates. West Virginia up on Houston 10-7. That in-game number was 6.5. I jumped on the Cougs plus the 6.5. There's 8:28 left. We'll keep you updated in that. And SMU jumped out early on East Carolina. About 6 minutes left, 7-0 for the Mustangs. They forced a punt, and will start their second drive coming up in just a couple of minutes. Updated lines on FanDuel right now for the college. Let me get you that in terms of SMU. Off the board, West Virginia still at 4.5 now. Total is at 47 and a hook. West Virginia 2-0. In the Big 12. Now, the reason why I'm taking Houston with the points, Donovan Smith, gutty quarterback from Texas Tech, but entering this game or entering this year, Neil Brown in West Virginia, since he's been there five seasons, 330 winning percentage in terms of on the road or on a neutral field. Not a very good road team under the tenure of Neil Brown, and that's why we're taking the Houston Cougars. Plus, Houston looks phenomenal in the home uniforms, all black with the white helmet. So we'll keep you updated on that. They just got a first down across the 30, so they're cooking with a little bit of gas here early in the second quarter. Big slate for college football week 7. I can't wait. This might be, and I know we had a big weekend a few weeks ago, but this is turning out to be a marquee slate, especially when you look at the gambling perspective. There's at least 6 to 8 games that I absolutely love for this matchup. So keep an eye out for that. We'll break it down. We also have NFL Week 7. Matias will jump in. We'll talk about his Dirty Birds. We'll talk about the NFC East a little bit. We have a lot to get you prepped and ready for, including that game in Philly between Atlanta and the Philadelphia Phillies on the baseball side. Coming right back on Carver and Lisi, breaking down college football week 7. Keep it where it is, baby.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I tell you what, Sean Payton's entering the danger zone, and that's right, no more shine, Sean. You've been away a long time. You've been slapped silly in the first 6 weeks of the NFL season. It's amazing. Where's that offensive ingenuity? Where's that coaching it up? All we do is we eat sand and crap steel. Where's Sean Payton? Unbelievable. Looks like they're just underway with the national anthem in Arrowhead. It looks fantastic. It looked like he rocked it out. I don't know exactly how it sounded. I got it on mute, but we'll keep you updated with the first drive. SMU in terms of the college game, 14-0 now in terms of East Carolina. Big play. I think they scored on about a 60-yard bomb. So the passing game is getting going for the Mustangs in terms of this ball game. It looks like Garrett Green and the offense back out there for West Virginia. They have a critical 3rd-and-6. So that game's a little tight. And that's the one thing that we talked about in terms of West Virginia. Defense has been playing much better this year. Defense has been keeping them in ball games, and that's why they're 2-0. They knocked off my Texas Tech team with a backup quarterback, Marichal. Defense stepped up, contained Brennan Morton and Tyler Shuck in that ball game. They run the football with C.J. Donaldson. If you could force Garrett Green in that passing attack into long third downs, though, you have a recipe to potentially knocking off West Virginia. So it looks like they're off the field for the Cougars' penalty on West Virginia with a holding call. So they will get the football with about 5:32 left. We talked about potential matchups for college football, and I'll get Mateus going next segment about Atlanta, but a couple of people have brought this up about the weak slate in regards to Carver's system and how it relates potentially to Notre Dame and USC this coming weekend. Typically, and I don't believe, and it's not a home team, but it's when you have an unranked team that's favored over a ranked team. Typically, Carver likes to say, lay the wood, something doesn't potentially smell. It happened a couple of times this year. I forget the one game that it did happen. I want to say it was Kansas or it was someone else, like Duke. I'll remember the game as the show progresses, but they were home, they were laying a short number, and they wound up winning the ball game and covering the number. It wasn't even close if you took the points in regards to that ball game. So that's the system that Carver likes. It does line up in terms of Notre Dame and USC. Now, I did the numbers in regards to Notre Dame and USC. Couple of reasons why you're seeing the number. Yes, Notre Dame coming off a loss. Notre Dame, we know, pushed Ohio State to the limit. From the series perspective, Notre Dame has won four straight in the series against USC in terms of the last four meetings in South Bend. So they played in 2 years back-to-back, 2019 and 2021. Notre Dame got both of those victories. And then I believe in like 15 and 17 they played with Notre Dame picking them. So the last four meetings, Notre Dame has won in South Bend by an average margin of victory of 15.7 points per game. Okay, you couple that in with the fact that USC's defense looked absolutely gutless against Arizona and a freshman quarterback, Noah Fifita. Now, to Fifita's credit, he's playing better than Jaden Delora was. In back-to-back games, and this is something that needs to be noted in regards to Fifita's performance, He did throw for over 300 yards in back-to-back games. He threw for 300 yards and covered the line as a 19.5-point dog against Michael Penix and Washington. That potentially is Heisman Trophy winner Michael Penix and potentially the best team in the Pac-12 entering Week 7. So for him to do it against Caleb and Michael Penix in terms of back-to-back ball games, and I'm talking about their defenses, that was a gutty effort. So the perception is Notre Dame should just be able to run all over the front seven of USC, control the time of possession, and that's it. Get out of Dodge with a victory. But here's the thing that you really have to monitor when you look at this ball game. One, this is a huge game for Marcus Freeman on two folds. It's a huge game for Freeman to not lose the momentum of this year. Think about this team for a second. They open up in Dublin against Navy as a 20.5-point favorite. They boat race the midshipmen. You know, Hartman gets the road win over NC State. They're playing well. They're potentially looked at as a college football playoff contender. They go toe-to-toe with top-ranked Ohio State, and they lose on the last play of the game. It's okay. You have everything in front of you, and you get absolutely kicked in the chops last week by Louisville and Jeff Brohm. Now, all of a sudden, you're 5-2. You're staring at a potential third loss in week number 7. This went from a potential college football playoff team to now all of a sudden fighting for bowl contention with their third loss of the year. That's a bad look for Marcus Freeman in terms of his second year. And you look at last year as well. Young guy, coordinator, no head coaching experience, loses games that they shouldn't have, got pushed to the limit by Cal, loses to Marshall, games that they never should have been pushed to the limit on. He rebounds with an 8-4 year, and you have to say, okay, the growing pains are out of the way. It sky's the limit in year two. And everything looks like that when you lure Sam Hartman to South Bend. Sam Hartman is the best quarterback since potentially Tony Rice, and I know Tony Rice was an option guy, but we're talking marquee Rick Meyer. Everybody wants to talk about Brady Quinn. Brady Quinn was a bust in the NFL. Sam Hartman has the potential to be a Gardner Minshew successful type of quarterback. He can lead a team in the right system. You're talking about a quarterback in back-to-back years that threw for 39 and 38 touchdowns, respectively, at Wake Forest, one of the top quarterbacks in the ACC. You lure that type of talent to South Bend, you got to believe that this team is at least a 10 or an 11-win football team. They lose this game, it's going to be a huge mark on Marcus Freeman and the program moving forward. Same old Notre Dame. Can't get it done in a big spot. Start fast and limp to the finish line. Everything in front of them. That's why I think there's more potential pressure on Notre Dame to step up and win this matchup, especially knowing how they played on a national stage against undefeated Louisville last week. They broke their 30-game winning streak over ACC opponents. They held that solely over Florida State that had 29, even though they weren't technically part of the ACC. And here you got Caleb Williams. You have USC. All they have to do is win. They don't have to cover a 20-point line. And think about that for a second. USC went from laying 30 to San Jose State week one to laying 21 to Colorado, 21.5 to Arizona, and now they're catching 3 points. They have the better quarterback. They have the better coach. The defense is the concern. But if USC pushes tempo and forces Notre Dame into a game like in the 80s, it's game on, and you got to like USC's chances. Easier said than done, obviously. But if that's the way the game starts to play out, USC, I think, has a very good opportunity to pull this ball game out in South Bend. We'll come back. We'll get you prepped and ready for NFL action week number 6. Coming right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
That's what Russ is, that's what he's calling out there, Blue Rhino. He's audibling. Got a 4th-and-3 on the Kansas City 37. Sean Payton rolling the dice, dead under so far. Matias, don't tell me what happens. Russell running for it. He don't get it. Terrible. Shocker. Russ and Denver do not convert on the 4th down. Kansas City will take over. They stuffed him. Had that read out like, I'm telling you, they knew exactly where he was going. So great defense by the Chiefs. They hold. They take about 5.5 minutes off the clock. Houston now driving with about a minute 14 left. They got a 1st down inside West Virginia territory. I'll give you the update there, but we're rolling over there. Matias, I know I said we would bring up the Atlanta Falcons, but before we do that, I want to get your take in terms of the first drive and just Sean Payton as a whole. Am I wrong to bash him and think that he came in cocky and think of that he could just, you know, sprinkle a little pixie dust on Russell Wilson and the Broncos to turn it around?
No, Joe, you know what? At the same time, I think Coach Payton hasn't done a terrible job. I think Russell Wilson has just played a terrible first few games. And when I think about that, I think of games that they've actually been in where you had the Broncos, you know, able to go down the field and maybe tie the game and send the game to overtime or even win a game. But Russ has just not had good quarterback presence in the pocket. You know, he's lost fumbles. He's been running for his life. He's made bad decisions. And just now, you know, on this last drive, they got lucky to be in that 4th-and-3 because he should have been sacked the previous play before that. They were going to get out with a sack, and he ran for his life and got lucky to get those couple of yards, and therefore he gets sacked again on 4th-and-3. So in my opinion, Joe, at what point do we see Stidham get behind center for the Denver Broncos? You know, what does that leave with Coach Payton? Yeah, man, the last memory I have of Stidham is him with the Raiders last season when he's taking over for Derek Carr, and he's throwing for hundreds of yards around the field, and Devontae Adams is actually praising him for being a competitor. So at what point do we say screw Russell Wilson, let's put in Stidham for a little bit?
It is amazing. Stidham was with Belichick in New England, right? You think Belichick wishes he had Stidham now when you look at the garbage quarterbacks he has in regards to Mac Jones and Bailey Zappi right now? And again, I'm a defender of Mac Jones. It's not all his fault. He's got absolutely no weapons, but that is a pretty good point in regards to that. I mean, Stidham, you know that game that he lit it up was against San Francisco too, which is pretty ironic when you think about that. That was the game that Devontae Adams had a huge day, and Stidham did throw for over 300 yards last year. It will be intriguing to see what the approach is after this game of Denver. I think it's a complete tank, and I don't know if Sean Payton has signed up for a complete rebuild, because I talked about it today in terms of Football Full Circle with Ben, and he had his choice about the teams he wanted to go to. He went to this team because he thought they were the best set to make a playoff run and even a wild card, because they had the quarterback, they had the defense, and they had some weapons. He could have went to Carolina. He could have went to some other organizations that weren't as, let's say, stacked in regards to that on paper, and he chose to go to Denver and then make the comments about Nate Hackett, and all he's done is coach this team down into the dirt. So that's on Sean Payton. That's on nobody else. Well, we'll keep you updated. Pacheco, there you go, big boy. 6 yards. Feed him. We need him to get over 90 in the game. First down Chiefs across midfield. So we'll keep you updated on that. Now,
let's go, Joe. We need Pacheco for a touchdown. We need Kelsey for a touchdown. Let's go.
You tweeted me today, and you've been pumping this drum about Atlanta and Dez Ritter, undefeated in college, undefeated at home in Atlanta, and that all of a sudden, you know, it's a waltz in the park. They're just going to dominate the Commanders. Why is it only 2.5 then if they beat the Texans and they had a dominant home victory? Why is it only less than a field goal?
Because the Falcons haven't proven yet that they are an elite team. And you know what? They're not that type of team. They're a type of team where if they play good football and they defend and play with energy at their home, they are able to be in every game they play in. And that doesn't matter if they're the best team playing the Philadelphia Eagles in there. If the Falcons play their type of football, their brand of football right now, which is a young, energetic, ball-hawking type of football, you know, a fourth-quarter team, they don't die until you literally, you know, you got to beat the Falcons and beat them all the way down like the Detroit Lions did, you know, in the fourth quarter, continuing to pound that drum down. That's how you beat the Falcons. But the Falcons, you know, the Commanders aren't that type of team. At the same time, that, you know, you could throw all over the Commanders. You know, I expect Ritter to have a big game actually this Sunday against the Commanders. Is it going to be a tight game? Absolutely. You know, the Falcons aren't an elite team. They're going to give up some points sometimes. They're going to make mistakes. But what I can tell you about this Falcons team is that they will continue to fight no matter what the circumstances are. But that's what happens when you get these new types of teams with this newfound energy, kind of like the Minnesota Vikings last year. You know what I mean? They had that energy and they were in every single game and they won all their close games. Look at Minnesota this year. They're a good football team, but at the same time, they're losing all their close games, Joe.
Yeah, and Kirk Cousins is on the block. It's over. He could be chopped before you know it. First down, Pacheco. Here's the thing. I think that was a very lucid argument. Right? Remember my cousin Vinny overruled? I'll tell you this. I'm going the other way. Based off of how you just laid that out, I love the Commanders. You, Carver, I know you're back in Atlanta. I'm going on the Commanders this weekend outright. I feel strong about it, too. I really do. I think the Commanders are the side. And if I'm wrong, you know, I'll probably eat my words. But 2.5 at
plus. Let me ask you this, Joe. How could you be so against Riverboat Ron last week against the Bears where you wouldn't bet anything
was
on
I
him?
Right?
You know?
Right, right.
Well, yeah, you were right. But what gives you the confidence to say this guy's going to do a great job in Atlanta against a team who has the momentum on their back?
That's a very good point, Matias. Sometimes two negatives equal a positive. You get a negative in Rivera, you get a negative in Des Ritter, and all of a sudden I'm thinking the other way. I think Sam Howell, I believe in EB. I believe in the. I tell you what, McLaurin, Logan Thomas got involved last week in garbage time. You know, Curtis Samuel. I think those playmakers can challenge Atlanta over the top. Now, keep in mind as well, I mean, they shut down C.J. Stroud for the most part, but he still threw for about 245 in that ballgame. So he still made plays. And, you know, they limited the big plays to Tank Dell and everybody over the top. They forced short to intermediate throws. He was confident and poised to do that. They just couldn't capitalize in red zone opportunities. That's where Atlanta held them to field goals and not touchdowns. I think it'll be different with Washington. I actually like the over here, too. I think if you're going to take Washington, you back it with the over. Because if you're Washington, I think you want to push tempo. 42.5? Let me ask you this. Do you think Atlanta can run on that front seven? Because Chicago attacked them over the top. They didn't run on them. Do you think that Atlanta can run the football on the front seven of the Commanders in this ballgame?
That's going to depend on how Des Ritter comes out throwing the football on Sunday, Joe. If he's able to come out accurately throwing the ball downfield, you know, hitting his receivers, that will open up the run game. If he is not accurate and we see bad throws in the beginning of the first quarter and we just see him rattled, you know, maybe Chase Young is getting in the backfield type of thing. The offensive line is giving up early sacks. He's going to get rattled, and that's where we see him make the most mistakes, and that's what will shut down the run game. But if we see Atlanta come out, you know, flying high, throwing dimes down the field, you know, feeling that first quarter energy, because Atlanta has been good in the first quarter of games when they've won them. You know, when they've won their games, they've been good in the first quarter. So let's see how the Falcons start. But if the Falcons do start hot, absolutely, I think they're going to be able to run the ball. It really lies on Des Ritter and his confidence and where he's going to be growing as a quarterback. It's exciting to be a Falcons fan right now, Joe, because you don't know what you're going to get. And right now, the team is looking forward because Ritter just had a good game, and they want to see him capitalize on it again. So it's an exciting time. This isn't Matt Ryan behind center where we know what we're going to get. You know, we don't know what the ceiling is with Ritter just yet.
All right, let's see how that game plays out. That is a 1 o'clock kick. We've had some movement from yesterday with this line. Now Cleveland catching 9.5. It was 6.5 all day yesterday because we weren't sure about Deshaun Watson. There wasn't anything out there in terms of a report that we heard from Stefanski that if Watson can't go, most likely it'll be PJ Walker, the former Carolina Panther Temple quarterback that will get the start over Dorian Thompson-Robinson. And now it's almost a sign, sealed, and delivered that P.J. Walker will get this game and start it for the Browns. It's a 9.5, Matias. I could tell you this right now. I sort of like the Browns, plus the 9.5. I don't like them to win it, but playing in the dog pound, 35.5 is the total, guy. You can't get, it's like a Big Ten game. I don't know if they're going to be, like, within one score. I think they could backdoor it, but plus the 9.5, I think I'm taking the Browns. This line opened up at 3.
It's a scary game, Joe.
It's up a touchdown. It's up a touchdown since then.
It's scary, Joe. You know, Jerome Ford, their backup running back right now, we don't know how injured he just is. He's actually a little banged up right now. So, you know, we might see a little bit more Kareem Hunt in this game, Joe.
That's good. What's wrong with Kareem Hunt? I don't mind that. Here's the thing. If you're PJ Walker, do not turn the football over. Play within the scheme. Rely on your defense, and you're going to have a shot to cover that line. More college football right here on Carver and Lisi. Keep it where it is, baby.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I'm mobile. I can run about 90 feet. I'm going to have to do that this Saturday. Coverage on college football today. 4 straight hours, baby. And then back it up with pro football today, live from the Ocean Casino. So tune in. Me, Kevin Walsh, and Donnie Wrightside, college football today. Me, Ben Stevens, and Kevin Walsh. So we got it covered for 4 hours, and now one hour of in-game coverage as well. So tune in. Quick update in terms of the baseball. I'll get more into it hopefully next week with Carver. But right now, bottom two, Phillies can knock out the Braves. You got first and second with one out. Everything is locked. So the Phillies hoping to jump up early right now. Here it is, minus 104 on the money line and over 6.5 at plus 106. In the break, shocker, Russell Wilson with an interception. Pat Mahomes and Kansas City come right back, and he gets Travis Kelce involved. Huge pass to take the Chiefs inside the Denver 30. There is a flag, personal foul. That's half the distance now. So we'll keep you updated in regards to that. Taylor Swift loves what she sees out of her man. I tell you what, he's getting used to the schedule, right? Back-to-back week 60 and 69 yards. Now he's stepping it up in terms of prime time. She ain't going to change the itinerary, Travis, for 6 receptions and 60 yards. We need to get 12, 150, and 2. There she goes. Oh, there goes her guy. So,
Joe, I didn't even know she was there, Joe. This must have been the least publicized Taylor Swift game there was. You just brought it to my attention that she's there, Joe.
Yep, she's rocking. She's in Chief Heaven right now. So we'll keep you updated on that. In the college football, Houston, right before the break, scored. So now they're up at halftime 14-10 on West Virginia. Hopefully you jumped on them when I said in terms of the plus money and plus points. They were +4.5. I got them at +6.5. Now Houston is the favorite at -1.5 on FanDuel, and they're putting up in terms of the total right now a light number still, 47 and a hook. So keep an eye out for that. -106 for the Mountaineers, -120 for Houston, and then SMU is up 14-3. Second quarter, 8 minutes left. Laying 18.5 now. Pre-kick, it was 12.5, 47.5 the total. Juiced to the over at -128. We'll keep you updated on everything coming up over the next 20 minutes. We'll jump now into week 7 of the college football slate. Better than anything, I can't believe that we're here. We're already past the midway point. It's amazing when you think about how fast college football comes and goes. It's like amazing. We wait all off season. It's like climbing Mount Everest until you get there. But when it comes, it's full throttle ahead. We get great games each and every week. And fast forward, we're already in week number 7 in regards to the slate. Now, I talked about the big ones yesterday, Oregon and Washington. Carver will call us later on Friday, and we'll break down all of our best bets. So if we don't get to it today, don't worry. We got you covered tomorrow with the NFL and college picks. Update in Arrowhead. Dead under here, 255. Mahomes throws an interception at the 1-yard line. So Denver will take over. Bad pass, bad decision on their own 7-yard line. So we'll keep you updated in regards to that. But the under-the-radar games for college football, not the top maybe 25 or the ones that really come to note in terms of the top 25. Interesting in terms of the under the radar games, and one that I like, and it might be a best bet in regards to the show tomorrow's NC State over Duke. I'm starting to like that game a little bit more and more. We talked about MJ Morris coming on last week in regards to Brennan Armstrong. Armstrong inconsistent. And I never thought that Brennan Armstrong would be a good fit in NC State. I thought he would be a better fit, believe it or not, at Notre Dame. But once Hartman went there, Armstrong went to NC State. And with Leary moving on to Kentucky, you're like, okay, I could see it. It was a 3,000-yard passer where Mendenhall, he can run it. Agile, mobile, the RPO game. Well, he really hasn't translated. And think about it in regards to NC State's offense. They used to have running backs like Bam Knight and Person that could pound the rock between the tackles. They needed a quarterback like Devin Leary that was prototypical, poised in the pocket, and just had a great touch. And that's what Devin Leary did in terms of his tenure in Raleigh, right? He broke Phillip Rivers' all-time passing touchdown mark at 35 2 years ago. The difference is that Brennan Armstrong, ever since Tony Elliott got there to Virginia 2 years ago, has struggled with his reads and progressions. When you force Brennan Armstrong now in the pocket, he doesn't know where to go with the football. He struggles understanding and having the confidence to throw the football into tight windows that has led to interceptions and obviously losses for NC State over, you know, not just this year, but losses for Virginia last year. And think about that. Last year, Brennan Armstrong threw for in that offense with Tony Elliott, 7 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Through 12 games last year, that offense only had 7 touchdowns. That's how bad Brennan Armstrong was with the Virginia Cavaliers. This year, he's struggling. He gets benched. MJ Morris potentially could be that guy. The reason why I like NC State here is the physicality on the defensive side of the ball. We talk about their front seven being underrated, and they are. They're holding opposing offenses well under 3.5 yards per carry and well under 100 rushing yards per game. And that's important because that is still the bread and butter of what Mike Elko and that offense want to do. And I've said that if Riley Leonard can't go, he's a game-time decision. Even if he does go, he's got the ankle injury. Do we think that Riley Leonard is going to tuck it and run as much as he did all of the regular season right now? They're averaging 199 rushing yards per game, 5.4 yards per carry, and Riley Leonard is the leading rusher, averaging 6.9 yards on the ground. That is going to be the matchup going up against NC State. And not only that, but in terms of NC State and what they bring from a defensive perspective, they stop the run, and they have one of the top third down defenses in all of college football, giving up only about 29% in terms of third down defense and opportunities to opposing quarterbacks. So if Leonard is not 100%, and they're forced into third downs, maybe they could get some quarterback pressures on it. Let's not forget, this front seven has 21 total sacks on the year for NC State. This is a team that pushed Jack Plummer and Louisville to the limit and held them to 13 points 2 weeks ago and forced 2 interceptions. They covered that 3.5-point number in Raleigh. So this is no joke. And their offensive line as well, through 6 games, 9 sacks allowed. So you got to believe that MJ Morris is going to have time in terms of the pocket to potentially pick apart the secondary of Duke. Now, credit to Mike Elko, credit to the staff, always disciplined. They went toe-to-toe with Notre Dame. I think this is a tough ask. I think NC State is a lot better defensively than people think, and I'm calling for the upset in regards to that matchup. I already took them plus the 3.5 points in that ballgame. Keep an eye out for UCLA big picture. And I bring that up because they're on the road in Corvallis to square off against the Ducks. And what I mean big picture is you look at the Pac-12 right now. You got Oregon at 2-1. You got Washington at 2-1, USC at 3-1, Oregon State at 9-1, Utah at 16-1, and UCLA at 20-1. UCLA's only loss in the conference came a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, to Utah, 14-7. They square off with Oregon State catching 3.5. Carson Steele and that offense are running it. The defense is playing sound, holding opposing offenses to 68 rushing yards per game, less than 3 yards per carry, very solid in third down defense as well. And you're talking about an Oregon State team that gave up 241 on the ground to an average rushing attack in terms of the Cal Bears. At 20-1, if UCLA can win this game, and you look at big picture for Chip Kelly, because nobody seems to be talking about UCLA. I was on them last year as a potential dark horse, and Dorian Thompson-Robinson and the Bruins lost to the Trojans 45-42. They had the football. Last drive, Thompson throws the pick. They have Oregon State, Stanford, Colorado, Arizona State, the rivalry game with Southern California, and Cal. So they got, and I know Colorado's good. They could be fighting for bowl contention as well. That's not a tough out. But from an interior, if you're thinking just interior line perspective, they have the advantage over Stanford, Cal, Arizona, Arizona State, and Colorado. The only two games that are potentially up in the air, Oregon State this week, and the big one with USC. They could be a one-loss team. They potentially, at 20-1, could win the Pac-12. And I think they have 200-1 odds to potentially win the college football playoff. I understand. Most likely they're not going to do that. But if they get to the college football playoff, you got a good shot. Their number right now, in terms of 28-1 to crack it for the Bruins. That's something to look at in terms of big picture for UCLA. So keep an eye out for that. The other one that I think is pretty intriguing, and it's twofold, SEC right now. Tennessee and Ole Miss. And the reason why I bring that up is this is to make the college football playoff. Tennessee at 40-1, Ole Miss at 60-1. Ole Miss lost to Bama. Tennessee lost to Florida. You got Tennessee, A&M this week. I'm on A&M. But should they navigate through that and potentially get the win, they have Alabama next week in Tuscaloosa. They're catching 8.5. They have, I believe, Georgia. Yes, they have Georgia in their house. So they're going to have to beat A&M, Bama, Georgia, and then potentially either whoever comes out of the SEC West yet again. So keep an eye out for that. Could be LSU, could be Ole Miss. Because if they give Alabama a loss, it's always possible. So keep an eye out for that. That's something to look at. We'll wrap it up coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Love it, baby. Love it. Wrapping up hour one here. What a snooze fest in Kansas City. Talk about a dead under. 3-0 Kansas City. All I see is turnovers, fumbles, interceptions. KC is driving inside the 45. It's all Mahomes, too. No Pacheco. It's penalties. Look at this. Unbelievable. Absolutely terrible. Terrible right now. It's terrible. Unbelievable for Patrick Mahomes. A little inconsistent now. This is now not just one game. This is a few where we've seen the offense lack continuity. He went to Travis Kelce early. Since that time, the Denver defense is bowed up. They bowed up right now. So we'll give you the updated line in regards to KC. Touchdown, West Virginia. Just like that. Amazing. They caught him sleeping. Big play over the top. And that's why I can't stand Holgorsen. No halftime adjustments. This is why I bash this guy. Because he goes in. I don't know what he does. He eats a hoagie. He goes to the bathroom. How about getting to a chalkboard? Rip it into these guys. No game plan. Kansas City is a 12.5-point favorite right now on FanDuel. 37.5 is the total. Juice to the under at -122. 12:15 left. And now they got Clyde Edwards-Helaire in. That's great. What happened to Pacheco? the kid from Rutgers. He's pounding the rock, and all of a sudden we're looking good. He had 15 yards in his first two carries. Now we got absolutely nothing. So we'll see. They got a 3rd and 8. We'll keep you updated. Coming back next hour, all NFL, all college, baby, right here on Carver and Lisi. Keep it where it is. Somebody's